When a team relocates, it just plain sucks. For the baseball fans that... What was this? Salt Lake City, what the f***? Hi, I'm Joel Garcia. Welcome to the Pop Culture Shuffle. On today's show, I have a few things to talk about. First up, war. What is it good for? Well, in Civil War's case, something really boring, as I talk about Civil War. Then, I talk about the recent announcement of the Oakland A's moving to Sacramento, and then Las Vegas. And finally, I bid farewell to the 99 cent store. But first, let's go to the movies. After unintentionally not going to the movies for a couple of months, I finally found a film that piqued my curiosity. Civil War. No, not the Captain America film of a similar title, but instead, 2024's Civil War. The film follows a group of journalists who are traveling to Washington, D.C. to interview the president. Said group consists of photojournalist Lee Smith, fellow journalists Joel and Sammy, and an aspiring photojournalist Jesse, who looks up to Lee. Their main goal is to get an exclusive with the president, who is currently in his third term. Their trip to DC, however, occurs in the midst of a war between several seceded parts of the country, most especially the Western forces of California and Texas. Now before I get to the film, I have to talk about the studio that worked on the film, A24. Now it's a studio that most of you are probably well aware of. In fact, it has even won a few Oscars, most especially for the film Everything Everywhere All at Once. And it's a studio that has made a name for itself, mostly because of how it's not like other major studios. It's prominently independent, it's more artistic, and unlike, say, Disney or Warner Brothers, it's not focused on making a big budget franchise. It does have franchises, but in general, it's not that many, and if anything, the ones they do have are generally, well, low-key compared to something like, say, Friday the 13th. Now, when it comes to their work, A24 is a studio that I've been trying for the longest time to get into. And not because, I haven't been able to watch it. It's just a case where, in general, most of their stuff just doesn't appeal to me. I mean, just looking at the list of films they have, in general, they're, well, to be frank, very depressing. And I'm someone who honestly tries his best to watch films that are happy, enjoying, and uplifting. And it's not like I'm not saying there are bad things in the world. I just prefer my escapist films to be, well, you know, escapist. So in general, it's just been a case where most of these films just don't appeal to me. I know people like these films, and it might appeal to them, but not me, sorry. It's similar to how, say, someone will love Godzilla Kong, but for me, I could care less. So in general, it's been really difficult, and I think the closest I've been to seeing anything from A24 was the Carmichael Show, a short-lived sitcom from NBC, which, as far as I can tell, was one of their earlier works. And that show was pretty funny, even if NBC did really give it some terrible time slots. So otherwise, it's just been a struggle for me to get into the studio because, well, most of their work just doesn't appeal to me. And then Civil War came around and I was really intrigued by the premise. Now of course, it's a very controversial film because in general, it focuses on a modern day Civil War in which apparently, in this alternate universe, the president is in his third term, and the country has fallen apart to the point where California and Texas, two wildly political places in the country, if you know what I'm talking about, team up to take down the government. Now that to me did appeal a lot, because it's something unbelievable, and I remember seeing on TikTok when I did a review of it, that people were just pointing that out as a joke, how California and Texas teaming up made no sense. And in a way, It doesn't. Yet at the same time, it does leave the door open for a lot. Because how bad does the world have to be in this alternate universe to make California the most liberal state in the country, and Texas, by contrast, the most conservative, team up? It's a good old enemy mind story, and I really love those stories about enemy mind, where something is so bad, the good guy and the bad guy team up. And we've seen it a lot of times elsewhere. Dragon Ball Z, for example, starts off with a story in which Goku takes on Vegeta, but after some time and a few other bad guys, the two become, well, best friends, sort of. So when it comes to Civil War, I know about the stars of the film. I know about Kirsten Dunst, I know about Nick Offerman, and I know to an extent of Stephen McKinley Henderson, mostly because he's showing up as a judge in the Law & Order series. I know very little about the film's director, Alex Garland, though apparently he and Nick Offerman did previously work on Devs for FX, which I also know very little about, and I do recall seeing it promoted at Comic-Con back in 2019, but I barely paid any attention to it, other than just it was the first major FX show on Hulu. So with all of that unawareness, I was coming into this film pretty much blind. And to me, that's a good thing, because this is a film in which I knew nothing about the premise, I knew nothing about the director, and my only awareness beforehand was just of the stars. The premise also piqued my interest, because it's a story in which apparently the United States is going another civil war. That's where the film starts falling apart. The film is incredibly boring. I really want to get to the positives first, because yes, despite my statement, there are a few positives. For starters, I really did like the cinematography. There were certain shots which just looked amazing, and it really does show how much money was spent on this film, which, as far as I can tell, and according to most sources I've seen online, was about $50 million. And in certain cases, it really does show. Like, one of my favorite visuals was of the journalist driving through this fire. And you can just see how the fire sparkles and glitters all over the place, especially when they're driving around and at one point, it looks like snow. It's a beautiful visual. Something else I also really liked was the lack of a score. There isn't any dun-dun or any, like, dramatic tone underneath the whole thing. There isn't, like, some kind of lingering violin or anything in the entire film. Music does appear, but it's not, like, a major thing. I think I only recall hearing music one or three times, and in general, it was just a bunch of out-of-place music. But before we get to that, the only other positive I want to give to this film is the silence. Because of the lack of score, there are several moments in this film in which there is a lingering silence, which really does set up the tone. That was something I really liked about the film, that it really did know how to use silence. And to quote an AMC teaser I saw beforehand, silence is golden. By the way, I really love that AMC brought back the silence is golden motto right down to using the old font, but going back to my point, it was one of the things I really liked about the film, because sometimes silence can really help a film move along. You don't need a giant lingering piano in order to emphasize this is a dramatic moment. No, just get the silence in, and that's all. So those are the positives I had, but everything else can just be described as bad or disappointing. Now the bad part I need to get into is just the way the whole thing is set up. The film starts off with the premise that yes, the president is in his third term, there's a civil war going on, and apparently at some point, the president somehow disbanded the FBI. And that's pretty much all the world building you're getting from this film. And that to me was a bad idea. Now, it's not like I want the film to explain every particular little detail to me, but at the same time, I feel like at least it needs to justify why is everyone in the midst of a civil war? Why is the whole nation falling apart to the point where apparently they're not accepting American money anymore, but instead Canadian dollars? And it just never bothers to explain that. And again, I don't want every detail to be explained, I just want to know How did everyone get here? Another issue I had with the film was the music. Now again, there's no score, but at certain moments, random songs start playing, and I don't recognize the artist, but it came at the really weirdest moments. Like, probably one good example I can bring up that's not from the climax is a sequence in which one of the characters witnesses an execution. And it's a sequence that, in most other stories, would be seen, with a lot of gunfire in the background. But all of a sudden, a song starts playing and the gunfire is just muted out. You only see the visuals of this happening, but you can't hear any of the bullets being shot. I found that really distracting because why is this being played here? Is it trying to tone down the seriousness of the moment? Because honestly, there's no way to tone down an execution. The sad part is, that is the only weakness of the sound because everywhere else it works. Something else I really liked was when it was dead silence and the film needed to pick things up again, you could hear a random gunshot and suddenly we're back in the action. In a way, it reminded me a lot of Joker, in which, while there is a lot of violence in that film, guns are only fired very intermittently. And whenever a gun is fired in that film, it comes across as loud and blatant to point out, yes, he's shooting somebody. The same here with Civil War, in which, when you hear a gun get fired, it comes in loud and blazing. Now, frankly, that was the only bad thing about the film. So you may be wondering, why did I find it so boring? Well, it would be the characters, which to me serves as the film's biggest problem. Now, I will freely admit that when it comes to Kirsten Dunst, I have not seen a lot of her other work. In fact, I think the last time I ever saw a film with Kirsten Dunst in theaters might have been Spider-Man 2. Oh, and Spider-Man 3, but I saw that film later on Blu-ray. Now, I came again to this film with low expectations, since I have seen bits and pieces of Kirsten Dunst's other work, so obviously she's not going to play Mary Jane in this film. Unfortunately, the character she does play in this film is really dull. Now, the film tries to establish Lee as being this character who has basically been jaded by war. She has pretty much seen it all of the aspects of war, and she's someone who understands the problems of war and sees, war is bad. So to the point where, she's seeing something terrible happening? Okay, let's move on, take a picture and go. She's basically become very monotonous to it. The film really tries to show her in a contrast to, say, Jesse, the younger photographer who is trying to be like Lee because, I grew up watching your photos, it's really beautiful, I want to be like you. And we see the difference in which we see this character who is just trying to be a great photographer see war straight up her face. Unfortunately, the problem is that Lee really barely emotes. Kirsten Dunst's performance makes it seem like, look, it's a normal day, And there's barely any moment where she gets to react to something else. She feels like the type of person who's basically doesn't care about anybody unless she has to care. Because even when she's trying to, take care of Jesse, it mostly comes across as very corporative in a way. By that I mean, let's say there's a situation in which a character is trying to save somebody else, like a father and son. In which the father's like, I have to save you because you're my son and I love you. Whereas with a character like Kirsten Dunst Lee is more like, I have to save you so I can fight with a dependent on my taxes. And then by the end of the film, she mostly becomes forgettable. Without giving away a lot, let's just say there's a moment in the climax in which something happens to her and I did not care at all. It was just, anyway. And I feel like the same thing happened with the other characters, such as Sammy, played by Stephen McKinley Henderson, who is supposed to be like this old, wise person. And there are moments in which it works, but in the end, he just becomes more and more of a liability, which the film does acknowledge, to the point where it made me wonder, why is he on this road trip? And then there's Jessie, played by Kaylee Spaney, and I'll say this about her performance. She is trying her best. She is playing somebody who in general is just someone new to the business, who is trying to get in and become a good photojournalist, and just seeing all of the ordeals she has to deal with. Something that really could have worked with Lee, in which you can see a parallel between somebody new to war and someone who has seen war all their lives. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen because, going back to Lee, the only thing we see of her past is in flashbacks, and at no point does it seem like Lee just tells Jessie, "Oh, here's what I dealt with when I went to see this thing in the war." Unfortunately, that never happens in the film. It would have been great to have the two just be like the traditional mentor and follower, in which Jessie could learn so much from Lee about, oh, being a photojournalist in the middle of a war. But that never happens. It mostly feels like Lee's method is just to throw her in the action and good luck. And whenever they have like some kind of moment in which Lee tried to take care of her, again, it just feels like business. Like there's no emotion in the moment. It's more of like survival, which is an emotion, but it's not, doesn't come across as an emotion, what I'm saying. And as for Joel, played by Wagner Moura, well, let's just say he was there. He had some interesting moments. And admittedly, he had one of the more funnier one-liners at the end of the film, but other than that, he was just there. I felt like it would have been interesting if the characters of Joel and Sammy were merged into a single person. By that I mean, maybe it would have been best to have a character who has pretty much seen everything, but at the same time could be of a similar age to Lee, so that in a way you have this father-mother dynamic with Lee and Joel alongside Jessie, and which basically is this family of journalists trying to get to DC. Because otherwise, he's just there. He's just a very bland character with potential that never goes anywhere. And then we have to bring up Nick Offerman, who plays the president. And he has, as far as I can tell, he doesn't have a name. He's just referred to as the president. Now this was a character I had a lot of interest in. Mainly because I like Nick Offerman. I haven't seen Parks and Recreation, but I have seen him perform elsewhere, and especially love him on Fox's The Great Nord, where he plays a dad. From what I saw in the trailer, it made him seem like he was going to be a major character, who would probably be like, oh, the antagonist in the film, who like, is trying to take down the journalist once and for all. And in fact, early on, the film acknowledges that apparently the president has been executing journalists. And I felt like, okay, this is taking us somewhere, let's go there. Unfortunately, the film never bothers to follow that up, nor do we see anything else with the president. Nick Offerman only appears two times in the entire film, in the first few minutes and the ending. Otherwise, his only appearances in the film are just him in radio format. So there are moments in which the characters are driving around and occasionally the radio will tune into the president saying something presidential like, "Let's all get together and stop this fighting." And that's pretty much it. This just seems really disappointing to me because again, you have this great comedic actor who can have this serious tone of voice in the right performance, but he does nothing in the film in the end. He's just there. I was really disappointed because I really wanted to see more of this character. I wanted to see, say, oh, a broadcast in which Nick Offerman, the president, does something violent and they let him get away with it. But no, the film refuses to world build. It doesn't bother to build anything up. It just says, okay, we're here, let's go. Now, I've received comments on my TikTok about how, no, the film is not about the war, why it's caused, who's the right person here. No, it's just about the journalists and their mission to talk to the president. While the film does a good job of doing that, it comes at the cost of pretty much everything else. In a way, it just feels like a really bad road trip movie with the occasional gunfire. Now, we just want to point out, I don't consider this film to be bad. There are a few positives that I enjoyed about it, yet at the same time, it's not a film I'm gonna go back and see again. I just found it really boring, and when it comes to boring films, I think the last time I saw a film in theaters that was that boring was probably Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. In both cases, they have one thing in common. It has several moments where it almost put me to sleep, only to be woken up by the sound of random gunfire. Now, I know some people will say that this film is good and it's a harbinger of doom for our future. It's not, it's a fucking movie. But to me, I just found it really boring. It has some good cinematography and some decent moments of silence, but the characters are frankly not that interesting, and the lack of world building really hurt the film. If it wanted to be just a story about journalists doing their jobs, fair enough, but you really need to set things up a bit. Overall, Civil War is just a really disappointing film, and one that I would not recommend. If you really want to see this film, despite what I just said, I would recommend waiting for it to come out to streaming. Otherwise, skip this film. Civil War is now in theaters. Long ago, I talked about the ongoing saga between Major League Baseball's Athletics, the city of Oakland, and Las Vegas. To recap, the A's have been trying for the longest time to get a new stadium. They have played at the Oakland Coliseum for their entire existence in Oakland, going all the way back to 1968 when they moved from Kansas City. Last year, after several failed attempts to get a new stadium anywhere in the Bay Area, it's a long story, the A's finally got the agreement they were looking for. In Las Vegas. It would make for an awkward couple of years as the team was still in the decades-long lease at the Coliseum, one that will end after this season. The new stadium will be located in what is currently the Tropicana Hotel, which recently closed its doors in preparation for its eventual demolition. Naturally, it led to a mystery of where the team would play, since building a new stadium will take some time. The Raiders, for example, stayed a few more years in Oakland before ultimately moving to their new stadium in Vegas. However, it was clear that such a farewell would not take place between the A's and Oakland. To sum up, let's just say a lot of people have been screaming, sell the team, and yeah. I recall hearing over the past year how the A's were considering leaving the Coliseum and playing somewhere else while waiting for the biggest stadium to be built. It included, but was not limited to, playing at their minor league affiliate stadium in Las Vegas, in Salt Lake City, Portland, or even Oracle Park, the San Francisco Giants' home stadium. The A's recently announced where they will be playing for at least the next few years. Sacramento. From what was stated, the team will play at the Sutter Health Park in West Sacramento, which is currently the home of the Giants' AAA affiliate, the Sacramento RiverCats. Yes, that is the team's actual name, and they're not the only one with a crazy team name. The team will play at the park for a minimum of 3 years, with an additional 2 years if the stadium in Las Vegas is not ready by then. This ordeal essentially closes the book for the team's time in Oakland, and by extension, the end of an era for the city itself. In 2019, Oakland was home to 3 professional sports teams. The NBA's Golden State Warriors, the Raiders, and the A's, who all play in the same area, in Oracle Arena in the Coliseum. Come next year, 2025, the city will be left without a single professional team. The Warriors now play in San Francisco, the Raiders already in Las Vegas, and the A's will be up north in Sacramento. I am aware Oakland has a couple of minor league soccer teams, the men's Oakland Roots and the women's Seoul SC. They play in their respective segments of the United Soccer League, a minor league compared to Major League Soccer and the National Women's Soccer League. Coincidentally, according to CBS Bay Area, both teams will apparently start playing at the Coliseum starting next year. As someone who saw the Chargers relocate in just the past decade, I fully understand what Oakland fans are in the midst of enduring. My heart really does go out to their impending loss. This season will be a difficult one for them. Seeing the team they followed all these decades leave them behind because some executive prefers to move the team to another city over lifetime fan loyalty. Obviously, there's a huge difference over what happened with the Chargers and the ongoing situation with the A's. While the possibility of relocation was well known for the longest time here in San Diego, at least the Chargers waited to officially announce they were ditching us until the season ended. The A's chose to make this relocation official only a week into the season. It's somehow even worse than when the Raiders relocated. They made the announcement with several years of anticipation, allowing fans to enjoy the team in Oakland for a few more years. For the A's, this season is it. Come October or November, the A's will be uprooted from Oakland. If there's anything else that can be said about the relocation announcement, at least Oakland fans were told much sooner than either fans in Washington, D.C. or Montreal, Canada. For some history, in 1971, when the Washington Senators were allowed to relocate to Texas and eventually become the Rangers, fans found out about it a week before the season ended. Without delving too much into what happened next, let's just say their last home game was a forfeit. In 2005, the Expos moved to D.C. and subsequent renaming to Nationals came on the same day as their final home game in Montreal. I have seen footage of that game, and while they did lose to the Marlins, I can definitely say the fans at that stadium were celebrating as if they had won. As fans in San Diego, St. Louis, Montreal, Atlanta, Winnipeg, Houston, Baltimore, and even Hartford, Connecticut can tell you, when a team relocates, it just plain sucks. For the baseball fans that... What was this? Salt Lake City, what the f***? Okay, I know I had a point to make here, but I'm just going to say this. Apparently, at the time of this recording, the Coyotes of the NHL are moving from Arizona to Utah. Honestly, at this moment, I don't have much to say about it, but I do have a lot to say about the Coyotes. But once they get more details on that, I'll talk about it. But anyway, for the baseball fans in Sacramento, this is your chance to impress Major League Baseball and prove that you're not just a basketball town. Surely, California State Capitol is big enough to maintain not only the Sacramento Kings, but also the Athletics. Besides, they already have a minor league soccer team and were very close to getting an expansion MLS team, which went instead to San Diego. To the Oakland Athletics fans, all I can say is that you should cherish the memories you have had with your team. From the back-to-back-to-back World Series in the 1970s to Moneyball, the A's were surely something special in Oakland. Dollar stores have been prevalent for the longest time. For a lot of people, they might have been introduced to the concept of a store with relatively cheap groceries and other items through stores like Family Dollar, Dollar Tree, and Dollar General. For those of us in California, Arizona, Nevada, and Texas, there was the 99 cent store, also known as the 99 cents only store or just the 99 store. You might have recently heard the company announce they will be shutting down the stores. At the time of recording, going out of business sales are already taking place at all of their locations. When it comes to dollar stores, I think they're a good idea, yet they also have flaws. HBO's Last Week Tonight did a fantastic report on the topic, highlighting the many issues stores such as Dollar General have to deal with, and I highly recommend checking it out on either YouTube or Max. Now, when it comes to my relationship with the store, there was a time in high school where I would regularly visit the 99 cent store, mostly because it happened to be a few blocks away from my high school. I would occasionally pass by whenever I had a few bucks and go get some random stuff, such as chips, candy, and even DVDs. Now, you might assume that the DVDs sold at the 99 cent store were nothing but public domain shorts and films. That would be partially true, but the store would also sell an absurd number of DVDs from Warner Brothers. They were mostly themed compilations or Volume 1 sets. I recall seeing a lot of NBA DVDs at one point, but it was in a time in which streaming was barely a thing. I was just amazed I could get so much content at such a low price. I remember buying DVDs that would include random episodes of Friends, The Drew Carey Show, and even Pokemon. I even discovered the anime Bleach by buying several early DVD volumes at the 99 cent store. I liked it so much, I wound up checking out the show when it ran on Cartoon Network. And then immediately dropped it because it got really dumb really fast. I think I stopped going to the 99 cent store regularly sometime after I graduated. For the most part, the store has been out of my way here in San Diego. By that I mean, it's not often the place I would go to anymore since, well, there are other much better stores to go to, like Aldi, Goodwill, and, well, if I wanted to find something cheap, Walmart. Which, ironically, is even harder to get because, believe it or not, Walmarts are not that prevalent, especially in downtown. Another more obvious reason was how they raised the prices. Suddenly, everything went from being 99 cents to a dollar to suddenly whatever price with 99 cents. It just became very misleading, especially because the name of the store has the words 99 cents only. The only way someone could justify their higher prices would be to actually call the store everything ends in 99 cents only. Then again, I find any store that blatantly refers to the price in their name to be a blatant lie. Dollar Tree, for example, sells some items for $1.25. Now, some places know to avoid this issue, which is why McDonald's has not offered a dollar menu in a long time. There are some things that are a dollar, but they refer to it as the $1, $2, $3 menu, so you know that it's not just a dollar. The closure of 99 cents reminds me a lot of Toys R Us. In both cases, they were supposed to offer something unique that other stores could not compete with. For the former, it was low prices, while in the latter's case, toys that most stores would not sell. As time went on, other stores began to pop up and both began to fall apart. For Toys R Us, it was Walmart and Amazon expanding their lineup of toys. For the 99 cent store, it was bigger chains like Dollar General, Family Dollar, and Dollar Tree being in more places. I mean, there's a reason why everyone knows about Dollar General and Family Dollar, but unless you live in one of the four states that I just brought up, you probably have no idea what the hell 99 cents is, other than maybe, oh look, that joke on Jimmy Kimmel Live that he regularly brings up. I personally believe the moment they began selling items for more than 99 cents was their point of no return. Sure, the company can blame the pandemic, but last I checked, COVID was not a thing in 2007. They also blamed inflation, but if that was the case, they would have either rebranded themselves to avoid making their store name an awkward relic, or simply shut down long ago. Will I miss the 99 cent store? Probably, but only because of how it was a small part of my high school memories. Otherwise, when compared to other long-gone stores of the past, I would still miss Comp USA or even Price Club more than a 99-cent store. As for the supposed attempt to save the California locations, if they do, I can only hope the new owners revert the store back to selling items at 99 cents. Otherwise, they should just rename the store to avoid associating it with a misleading price. Calling your store 99 cents only and selling everything for over a dollar makes as much sense as naming a restaurant Burger Bonanza but only selling hot dogs. If you're someone who's going to miss the 99 cent store, that is perfectly fine. But for me, I'm fine with it just disappearing. It long ago stopped being 99 cents only and just became another random dollar store to me. That's all the time we have for today's show. If you would like to know when the next episode comes out, remember to follow the podcast on your favorite stream provider. You can also follow me on social media at MrJoelGarcia9 on Instagram, Threads, and Twitter/X, as well as at MrJoelGarcia on TikTok. Until next time, thank you for listening.